Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 24th, 2017. So I hope that you're sitting around your fireplace, listening to reindeer prance on the roof, as you, with the Climate Minute humming away in the background, along with your Christmas songs and whatever. Anyway, I hope everyone has a happy holiday. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
And then we're also joined by our own climate hawk and Christmas elf, Ms. Mariah Tingle. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well.
Oh, God. All right. So here we are. So this week, there was a report in Grist, which I don't think has gotten as much coverage as it should. Or it should have. And I believe that it is not excessively hyperbolic in any sense. But Eric Holthouse, who writes for Grist, was attending attended a conference in New Orleans, as it happens, about the Arctic. And the conclusion of the Arctic is, the conclusion of the conference essentially is that the Arctic, the quotation here, the Arctic shows no sign of returning to a reliably frozen region, to the reliably frozen region of recent past decades. That is to say, the Arctic has melted. And the title of Holthouse's article is, Let It Go. The Arctic will never be frozen again. Which is stunningly calamitous news, right?
I mean, I just got chills.
And it's like, wait a minute, how come this isn't all over the front of every single evening newscast? I mean, the North Pole I'm not sure they're saying that it has currently melted and is ice-free, but basically the character of the region is dramatically different, and it's not going back to the way it was. Right, so Admiral Perry trudging across the Arctic expanse to get to the North Pole, basically that's, you know, maybe they might fall to the ice if they in the wintertime if they go up there.
And of course, where's Santa going to live?
Where's Santa going to live? He's going to have to live in a houseboat, Marin-style houseboat, right? And he'll be there with a Hawaiian shirt on. But the idea that this is just sort of slipping by in the mishugana of tax reform and Russian investigation and all this stuff. And of course, it's not just that the Arctic has melted, right? Because that has implications worldwide for weather. I mean, this article, I won't go through all of the details, but the article says that there's a link between the Arctic warming and droughts in California, that as the darker water presents itself, it warms up more, and of course that encourages algae blooms, which then disrupt all the food system in the area. And of course, within a decade or so, you'd expect that the permafrost would begin to thaw. It would no longer be perma, if you know what I mean. The frost would be occasional, but that lots and lots of methane gas will come out of that permafrost, that frozen swamp, which then is basically the wild card that everyone is worried about, that you would have uncontrolled global warming, because even if humans stopped emitting carbon dioxide, the methane from the permafrost would dominate the atmosphere of the planet. I mean, it's so I will stop there and let you two guys tell me what to think about this.
Well, you know, just as an add-on to that, the permafrost, as you say, will cause this sort of positive feedback of methane release, and this Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change has not even accounted for that in its their models of climate change impact. So,
I mean, like the Paris Accord, all that calculation has nothing to do with what would happen if the methane, if the permafrost goes, right?
Right. It's such a they can't directly quantify that or model that or really accurately enough, predict it in well enough ways that they have been able to include it in their sort of, you know, this is how much warming we'll have, and this is how much sea level rise, et cetera, et cetera. So the models, even the ones that show the most sea level rise and the most warming, don't actually include the permafrost, which is
horrifying.
A big deal. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to your point about the lack of media coverage on this, it says something that earlier this month, CNN did do a short special entitled "Global Warning: Arctic Melt," hosted by Clarissa Ward on this. Mm-hmm. You can find portions of it on YouTube, but noticeably they aired it on a Friday night on Anderson Cooper's 360, and then they aired another portion of it on a Saturday afternoon, Eastern time. So that sort of, you know, raises the question of, you know, couldn't they put this on like a Monday or a Tuesday? Why dump it on a Friday night?
Yeah, right, the news hole, the black hole of news.
Exactly.
Well, now,
go ahead.
So I'm sure that, you know, so of course Exxon has been doing research on climate change forever. And 40 years ago, they were already sort of eyeing, okay, when is the Arctic going to melt so that we can start drilling there, so we can start getting the oil out of it, right? Mm-hmm. So they're probably pretty excited about this news. I hate to say that.
Something else for them to toast, right? And I think one of the other things to note, I started reading climate stuff early in the 2000s, right? 2001, 2002. And they were talking about, the Arctic might be impaired by 2050 or the end of the end of the century, right? All of this has happened. This damage to the Arctic has happened much, 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 much faster than anyone thought. And so they always talk about uncertainties, right? And the uncertainties were always taken to be on the long side, that it would take longer to happen and not to, that these consequences would come much faster. But the idea that the Arctic would be essentially changed by before the year 2020 was not part of the discussion, right? It was just too shocking. I mean, for my money, you all know a guy named Bill McKibben, right, who wrote this book called The End of Nature, right? And the thesis of The End of Nature was essentially that, you know, the storm and fury that you feel when you go out into the forest, out into the world, out into nature, in quotation marks, that used to be impressionable and unchangeable by, you know, it was something you accepted as a human because you could do nothing about it. But humans have now effectively changed that. And whatever natural event happens, there's a human fingerprint on it. So the old, wild, ungovernable nature is gone, right? And it's been replaced by one that has been modified and influenced by human consequences of human activity. The same thing you think is true here. It's like the Arctic is gone, right? And that's a threshold, a profoundly important threshold that for the humans as a species, right? We've never had a time when humans were alive and there was no ice in the Arctic. And again, I'm not saying we're there yet, but I mean, basically we're not going to have a reliably frozen Arctic going forward. And that is a profound thing, that how humans come to terms with that. I mean, what do you do about it? I mean, ultimate Thule, right, was always, the farthest north away you could go was the scariest, mysterious place. And now we've gone and melted it, right? I think. Anyway, that's my obituary. So, okay, well, let's put that aside. We'll put up a link to the article, read it and weep. I mean, it is something that calls for action to try and protect what is remaining. Right?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, as you talk about how the increase in all of the sort of dangers we face from climate and how it's coming a lot faster than we expected, right? There was also a recent University of New Hampshire just released a study saying that, the major effects of climate change could be felt sooner than we think in New England by mid-century. And another article talked about skiers, snowmobilers, and fisher persons in New England. Their sport is going to be, anglers, their sport's going to be largely affected sooner than they think. So we have all of this information coming out about climate change is coming. It's coming faster than we think. And yet here we have our president dropping the mention of climate change from the national security strategy documents, you know, in the face of all of this, like, you know, wow, this is a bigger deal than we actually thought. And we really should be acting sooner and faster. And, you know, now they can't even mention climate change in the security. They can't even plan for climate change, climate action in the security strategy, which is a really big deal. I don't know how people like James Mattis, who, you know, has come out several times being very vocal about the need to plan for climate change and to, you know, it's a accelerant of instability or a threat multiplier. I don't know if those exact words were attributed to him, but the military in general is saying mm-hmm. these things. I don't know how Trump got the military to agree with him. And because supposedly he worked on this, they all kind of convened to put this stuff together. It's baffling.
Do either of you, I mean, I think I have a sense of what the National Security Strategy document is supposed to do, right? In my understanding, it's basically the annual statement. It's not quadrennial. It's not every 4 years. I think it's every year. But it's basically mm-hmm. the governing document that says, this is how we think about the world, and this is the stuff we recognize as the threats, and that strategy statement ripples down to the kind of projects that get run through the spy agencies and the Army, the Air Force, Marines, and all that kind of the military. They all look to this document to justify the things that it's doing. And so, to your point, Mariah, the fact that they have explicitly taken climate change out of that mix, when in the past it had been pretty much in there because things like the Norfolk Naval Base down in Virginia are going to go underwater soon, right? That that somehow that gets pulled out. I mean, you're back to finding, searching for some sort of explanation as to what could be the driver, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that a lot of the focus in that document has been switched to sort of economic security, mm-hmm. saying that that's really more important, you know. I saw a quote from it's Cassie Siegel, the director of the Center for Biological Diversity's Climate Law Institute, said this is an incredibly senseless move from a president whose first term was marked by devastating superstorms and wildfires, right? I mean, we all know that it's a senseless move in a lot of ways, but it's, you know,
nice to
drives
the
point home. Yeah, I mean, you know, even if you take it at that base, okay, so he wants to focus on economic security. Well, okay, so, you know, the renewable energy industry is that one of the fastest growing economic.
Right. I mean, even there, so, it's important, right? Even there, exactly. The clean energy economy is important.
Yeah. And you know, as to your point about Norfolk, Virginia, I mean, it's not that Norfolk is going to flood. It's flooding. I mean, it floods not just in heavy rains or during hurricanes. It floods when the sun is shining. I mean, it floods all of the time. And this is like a very major, you know, point of activity for the military.
Huge naval base, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess there's about 128 bases across the country that are vulnerable right now to climate change. And so, you know, that alone, the military is like, well, what are we doing here? You know, people, mm-hmm. we can't operate our military if we don't have a base.
I mean, I just to try and figure out when we wonder what justifies this kind of change to such an important document, I have two things come up for me. One is the idea that you know, the people that study, say, North Korea, right, where you look and say, oh, they're crazy people. I mean, there's no sense mm-hmm. in what they're doing. That is a failing of the security analysts on the American side, because that means they don't understand the internal dynamics of the enemy. They don't understand the internal dynamics of the North Korea regime, which would then internally, that's all self-justified. It's all justified in the North Korean perspective, right? So there's one thing that says, oh, there's a deeper thing that you must work harder to understand about why Trump would take this the climate part out of the security strategy. But then I just remember the other was, what was the guy? Some conservative columnist saying that, you know, maybe everything that Trump says is the equivalent of six butterflies flapping around in a jar, and it has no meaning, and it's just whatever pops into his head today. And that's equally terrifying, that somehow it's just his random obsession with, you know, I don't know. I don't know.
So if you want, you know, for our listeners, MCAN, Massachusetts Climate Action Network, our great hosts, screened a movie called Age of Consequences several months ago at this point. But it was both a terrifying movie, and it also clearly illustrated how important the military thinks it is for us to address climate change. It's definitely worth checking it out because, you know, you watch that movie and you're like, oh, wow. It is a threat multiplier. It is, we should be concerned about our infrastructure, food production, transportation network, and American lives in relation to climate change.
I will try to search up a link for the Age of Consequence and try and put it all right. So we got that. Oh my God. Then even better or along the same line of saying, WTF, what are these people thinking? What are they doing? There was a memo at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, that popped up. Let me see, Dia, let me have you explain it. Although I'm going to object to the idea that it was banned, that these words were banned. But tell me, what was the report out of the CDC this past week?
There was a report that the Trump administration has basically advised the Centers for Disease Control to not use certain words in preparing documents for next year's budget. The words that were discouraged.
You can say banned.
are vulnerable, entitlement, diversity, transgender, fetus, evidence-based, and science-based. So it's sort of like the new Trump dictionary, basically, where those words are not allowed. I think you can still use the word huge, though.
and greatly. Yeah, I mean, I guess that the point I was maybe made too much, but this was some of the reports said the words were banned, and it's not quite banned. It's even more insidious. It's saying, if you want money, find a way to talk about this without mentioning evidence-based, without being evidence-based, or don't mention these certain words. We've seen similar things we talk about in terms of climate, right? Where you can't say the word climate change, right? You can maybe dance all around the issue and talk about, you know, long-term changes in temperature or something. I don't know. But that's corrosive to the scientific method, right? It's just, it's the worst kind of thing, right? Mariah, I mean, it's consistent with regimes that don't believe in democracy, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, okay, so a couple of things. So, you know, just back to the phrases that they've blocked, that's a big challenge for the CDC because some of those phrases that they, like, for example, the CDC uses some of those phrases to prevent HIV among transgender people, and also they, use them to work on birth defects caused by the Zika virus, which includes research on the developing fetus, right? So they have to try and figure out other ways to say that, and, I guess there were some suggested phrases they could use instead of it, and one of the examples the article I read gave that instead of, you know, saying science-based or evidence-based is that the CDC, they have to say the CDC bases its recommendations on science in consideration with community standards and wishes.
Wow.
Which, okay, so we're going to base our decisions based on community wishes. the only thing I can think that they are, you know, not banning, but sort of discouraging the use of words like evidence-based and science-based is perhaps they feel that if you say, well, there's, you know, science-based research that says that climate change is, you know, causing more an influx of mosquitoes and a rise of malaria, that science-based term maybe makes it too concrete for the Trump administration to handle, right? It sort of says, it makes it sound like the science is real, which it is, and Trump wants the science not to be real, red team, blue team. The whole thing is, I'm just sort of, why would you get the word science-based out of there?
Yeah, for the CDC to not use evidence-based or science-based, it's like, well, what do you think they're doing?
Right.
We know they don't want Robert Mueller to make any evidence-based decisions.
That's true.
Go ahead.
I guess if you look at, from a historical context, if you look at the rises to power of the most authoritarian regimes, oligarchies, and dictatorships, they all sort of have these blatant lies, alternative facts that are repeated over and over again. And sort of the assumption is that if someone in power keeps saying these things, even if they're not evidence-based or science-based, eventually the majority of the people will start believing them. I read an article, and my full disclosure, my dad actually authored a nice blog about this, where sort of the rise of this so-called fake news, the goal is to persuade some people that a certain view of events is true, but also to kind of confuse everybody and hire a whole army of trolls that's going to sort of create a whole lot of different explanations and things. And then it allows, this was used in the Kremlin and in Russia. It allows the Russian regime to get away with all sorts of things when they do that. So this is a sort of a playbook out of Russia, big surprise there. That is really, really, really dangerous. You know, it's dangerous to our democracy.
I completely agree. I mean, this idea that you sort of make invalidate truth, and you put up so much BS that basically people give up and they don't really, they can't believe anything, so that nobody's right. The attacks on the press, attacks on the judiciary, these are all part and parcel of authoritarian regimes. And I'm sure that Trump does not have some little playbook in his back pocket that he pulls out to figure out what's the next diabolical thing he can do, but he's got this gut instinct that these the press and the judiciary stand in the way of him getting what he wants, and so they must be destroyed. And if evidence-based science projects have posed any threat to what he wants to do, he'll quash it and basically have kind of this Orwellian language police that demands that your proposal fit within some bounds, right? So I agree. Yeah. I think we're at a very dangerous crossroads, I think, as a country.
Yeah, right. And, along similar lines, there was a report about how the Secretary of Interior, Zinke, flew David Smith, who's a parkhead for Joshua Tree, from California to D.C. to scold him for tweeting about climate change. And he sort of made an example of this guy for all of the park leaders, sort of saying, you guys should not be talking about climate change. This is not what we talk about. This is not. And when you add to the wrinkle of this whole net neutrality thing, where now there can be discrete control over what's out on the internet, that's sort of part and parcel for this sort of dangerous thing. So
right. And I think that the question is what. Yeah, I mean, fomenting revolution in the streets is a dangerous thing to do. But I mean, it is, it's not clear to me what the lever is going to be to move the needle back towards a democratic process.
I have small children, so I have to. I'm going to give this sort of quaint reference, but there's the Fred Rogers, the Mr. Rogers quote about when I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, look for the helpers. You'll always find people helping. And I will say, I read these news stories and my blood is boiling and I'm so frustrated. And it's hard not to be completely despairing over yet another climate atrocity or threat to our democracy. I think of the helpers. I think of Doug Jones and Elizabeth Warren and Amara Healy and, Bill McKibben and 350.org and Kristen Gillibrand and Kamala Harris. And the folks at MCAN who, you know, just working tirelessly for the cause and refuse to give up or back down, and everyone's tired and everyone's weary. You know, McKibben's been doing this for decades, and it's certainly not the place I think he wanted to be, but he's not giving up. And, you know, it's a hard fight, but, you know.
I think, Mariah, you just gave us the title of the podcast. And I think that we need to put it down there. We will put up links to most of what we talked about at the blog. If you leave your computer out, Santa Claus will come down the chimney and Google this stuff for you. So when you wake up on Christmas morning, you will be able to, it'll all be laid out. But it'll be at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, Podbean, SoundCloud, and a bunch of other directories. And of course, you can find us on iTunes. So we will close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. Thanks for being here, DR.
Thanks.
Thanks for being here, Mariah.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hope you have a wonderful holiday. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.